It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Con Air, the podcast. I am your host, Jake Lewis, and normally on this show, myself and my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer, fly our way through Con Air, scene by scene, for 40 wonderful chapters with some wonderful guests. But we're taking a semi-hiatus, alternating between doing that and doing some other shows, releasing some older shows that are Con Air adjacent, and as is the case today, recording a new one, because I had a free evening, and there's a film that's Con Air adjacent, and I wanted to watch it, so that's what we're doing today. Mark is a little ill at the moment, so he's not going to join us, but I have a guest talked to me about Passenger 57. What is Passenger 57? Well, it's a 1992 American action thriller directed by Kevin Hooks and starring Wesley Snipes as John Cutter. Here he is. A veteran law enforcement official, as Wikipedia describes him, and airline security expert haunted by the death of his wife. And he's on a plane traveling from, I don't know where he's coming from, he's going to LA. And he's on that plane going to a new job. And on that plane also, there is a bad guy. There's a convicted felon. Bruce Payne plays Charles Rain, the Reign of Terror. The Reign of Terror. who is a known hijacker, so they transport him on a plane, and the hilarity ensues. So I need some help to talk about this film. Someone who you've already heard on a chapter of Con Air, and will probably be back for another chapter of Con Air before the run is out. From the mundane adventures of the Fangirl is Jeanette Ward. Jeanette, welcome back to the show.
Hello! What I really love is that you cannot get through the description of this movie without beginning to giggle. Perfect.
Well, I mean, I didn't even get to Tom Sizemore as Sly Del Vecchio.
Or the youngest Bruce Greenwood you've ever seen.
The youngest, greasiest Bruce Greenwood. He's just oiled himself up and gone through some kind of an air vent to escape somewhere. He's so slimy.
It's a big character choice. But to be fair, a lot of people are making big choices in this.
Yes, they are. We're going to talk about them. So, yes, you are the only person, the first person and only person I wanted to talk to about Passenger 57, because... you're a big Wesley Snipes fan, I believe. Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. I'm a big Wesley Snipes movie fan.
Yes.
I don't know that I'm a fan of Wesley Snipes. He's had some questionable things, but he's done a lot of stuff that I really, really like. In particular, when this dude was coming up in the 90s and he was kind of late 80s, early 90s big time action star. I mean, there were a handful of black action stars that weren't exclusively in the blaxploitation era, right? Out of the late 70s, early 80s, you had a lot of blaxploitation movies. Wesley Snipes was one who crossed over into gaining a white audience and was one who often was told, like, no, they don't want a black star, and then created his own production company, sought his own scripts, you know, executive produced a lot of stuff before anybody else was doing that in order to really put himself in front of people to pursue his own dreams. And I like that aspect. I also like his mentality towards shooting action sequences, which you don't see in this, and we will talk about. But also the thing about, he was trying to get Black Panther, the comic hero, turned into a movie for years, and was told multiple times, like, no one wants a black superhero, no one wants a black superhero, no one, and kept getting no's, and finally was like, okay, so what if I make a Blade movie that's a vampire movie, and in selling that as a horror movie, was able to get that made. And so that Blade coming out, hitting hard, being real big, really was the impetus to a lot of the other Marvel movies getting made, really helped kick off, gave the MCU ground to stand on, you know, to get going and take off. So I will give Wesley Snipes a lot of credit for a lot of the stuff that he did. And then, you know, there's other stuff. There you go.
Yeah, we'll not go into the time he spent in prison or that kind of stuff.
You know, and you can blame that on his bad accountants. I always like to point out, like, listen, he did 3 years of jail time for tax evasion. He did the time. You can name on both your hands and feet the number of other celebrities who have done legitimate crimes and not spent any time in jail. So
yes,
at the
absolutely.
Very least, he did serve his time.
Yes, yeah, and fair play to him. Now, yeah, I like what you said about, you know, he kind of crossed over, quotes, from the black audience to the white audience. And I feel like it's films like Passenger 57 that helped with that.
And 100%.
And the same year he did White Men Can't Jump, which is very much a two-hander with the very much white Woody Harrelson. So you can see, like, as lots of people go into that one.
Notable white person, Woody Harrelson.
Yes, known white guy, Woody Harrelson. known Cheers actor, which is a pseudonym for white guy, I think. As someone who's, I'm currently going through Cheers for the first time now.
Very
white cast.
Yes, it is.
No, so, I think Cliff Clavin has like a black colleague who's been in two episodes so far. And I'm on season 5.
Lord.
So yeah, so Fast and Furious 7 is you know. One of those many Die Hard on a blanket,
yes.
Die Hard on a plane. So
it's a cookie cutter 90s action flick. Period.
Absolutely, yes. It's the reluctant hero thrust into a situation they don't want to be in, and that's a film anyone can enjoy.
Of course, there are. What's ironic is after I was like, yeah, absolutely, I want to talk about Passenger 57. I always want to talk about Passenger 57. There is another Con Air adjacent. Wesley Snipes plane movie that I prefer, which is Drop Zone. So, you know, keep that in mind.
I mean, I haven't seen that one, so it's I will keep that in mind. our plan for the show is with Deep Blue Sea, once we finished the trilogy, we then did a whole bunch of Deep Blue Sea adjacent films. We're still doing that now. That isn't necessarily our plan for Con Air at the moment, with things change perhaps. But I think we're just doing these kind of semi-hiatus shows in the middle. We'll see how it goes. But Drop Zone, I think Mark has mentioned it. I think it is on a short list of potential episodes.
It's a little. I like it a little better than
Gary,
Passenger
57. Michael Jeter. Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
So Rex you Lynn. Can see just by looking at the cast why Drop Zone. Anyway.
Well, I mean, you could say the same thing about Passenger 57.
You really could, yes.
We have Elizabeth Hurley.
Right. I'm not going to lie to you, when I rewatched this, I was shocked to realize that was Elizabeth Hurley. I don't know that I remembered that.
Well, this was technically my second time seeing it. I had seen it once a long time ago, where I can only remember two things, one of which was Elizabeth Hurley is in it and is a bad guy. Which I watched this with my wife, who had never even heard of this before. And as soon as Elizabeth Hurley started talking, she was like, so she's in on it. She's second one. It's like, she's English. She must be on it.
Wow.
So, yeah, fair
enough. Impressive.
And the only other thing I could remember was that the film ended with Wesley Snipes in a casino saying, always bet on black, as a callback to when he said it earlier in the film, which does not happen in the film. That is not how this film ends.
No, you were saying that. I was like, wait, did I stop it too early? I don't remember that at all. No.
That is, I have referenced that as the ending of this film in a previous episode of Con Air. Of the podcast, and I got no response from Mark or whoever the guest was on that episode, and now I realize why. Because that was a fallacy. That's not something that happens in this. I was talking nonsense.
A great ending, especially since I think it ends with them walking through, you know, not to jump to the end, walking past a carnival with fireworks. Surely there was a roulette table that could have been thrown in there.
They are walking towards a carnival after they are offered a ride into town, which is 5 miles away, apart from the carnival that's clearly half a mile ahead of them. So, regardless. So, yeah, I think I was generally conflating the end of this film with the end of Con Air, which obviously ends with Steve Buscemi. Maybe the first time I watched them both was the same day or something, and they just merged together in my brain. I don't know.
And there's no problem with that.
No, not at all. They're both fun films. I just would happily do 40 episodes on one, and one episode on Passenger 57 feels plenty.
That's plenty.
So this wasn't your first time seeing it. What's your history with Passenger 57?
Well, I'm sure that I saw it when it first came out. In 92, I would have been a sophomore in high school, so maybe not in the theater, but definitely one of those where you rent it from the Blockbuster on the VHS repeatedly. So I know I saw it multiple times that way. I like a generic cookie-cutter action movie that you don't have to think too much about. You know the bad guy's going to get it in the end. The hero's going to come out on top. It doesn't require a ton of brain power, and it's fine. It's just fine.
I would say that is an adequate description. It is just fine. I'm not going to say I was underwhelmed, but when it first started playing, it was like 80 minutes long. I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right here. There's still feels like there's something missing, and I feel like there was something missing. That something was background. Like you don't, it's impossible to watch this and not compare it to Con Air or to Die Hard.
Where, of course,
because it's the same film in many ways, and there's so much in those films that's not the direct plot. There's just kind of color, just background, just flavor, and that's you get some here, but you don't get a lot. This is
very,
kind of streamlined.
Very little. Yeah, all your character development comes in very swift conversations between the, you know, couple of characters, and it's not a ton of development, and the fact that because you said it in the description that he's trying to get over the death of his wife, knowing that we get that story in a black and white flashback that he muses over while working out, because it's a 90s action movie, so he has to be like boxing and such. He starts by meditating.
He does. Yeah. This was during his Asian period, I think, where he was kind of obsessed with meditation.
To be fair, though, this is a dude who's got, you know, multiple level black belts in 6 or 7 different martial arts, so I don't know that that's ever a phase for him. That's just who he is. He just kind of exists as a martial artist. And yet the first time I think people saw him on screen was in Michael Jackson's Bad video. So if you haven't checked that out, everyone do be on the lookout for Wesley and Michael Jackson's Bad video.
It's been a while, but I might have to refresh myself.
Yes, yes. I think that's the same one Michael DiLorenzo was in. In any case, yes, the first note, I just kind of took notes as I was watching, and then I starred the things that I needed to discuss. The first one is music. And I get that when this came out, when like Lethal, the music felt Lethal Weapon-y, and that the synth jazz funkiness of it.
Oh, it's on the opening credits, where you've got the negative photos of Bruce Payne slowly zooming into his eye. And the letters from the title descending to his face, and that it's the most 90s thing ever.
Yes,
it is. Kind of terrible.
The music is insane, and doesn't. If there's anything that doesn't hold up in this, aside from all of the airport and airplane stuff, which doesn't hold up to anything anymore.
When he gets sexually assaulted by the lady on the
repeatedly
thing, yes.
There are multiple instances of this where they're like, oh, don't forget, he's a sex symbol. Everybody, hey, he's a sex symbol. Maybe you forgot he's a sex symbol. Like, guys, calm down, all right? Let me decide the level of Wesley Snipes' sexiness. And the movie doesn't need to insist on that for me. But yeah, and I couldn't figure out the negative image of Bruce Payne with the credits where you sink into his eye, and then the opening shot is you pull out to his eye. And the only character development we get on this dude is in this sequence where we figure out about to get plastic surgery to change his face for what seems to be the upteenth time.
Yeah, I kind of loved this opening.
He refuses anesthesia and says there will be no pain.
There will be no pain. Yeah, so he's a career criminal He's known to have caused two plane hijackings, but admits having done at least four, as well as some train bombings. And
what?
After
a low key brag, I mean, the guy's like, yeah, they've got you at least two hijackings. I've done at least twice that many.
Right.
Dude, that's only four. You couldn't have said I've done at least 10 times that many, so we're all more afraid of you.
You've got Cyrus the Virus like, I've killed more men than cancer. Like, that's a brag. It's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. Yeah. We talked about it. There's no way. That's a lot of people.
I've done twice as many as two is not.
Yeah. But there's also, they say there's some London train bombings he did some later on, I think. But so after every major crime where he's on the run, he gets this, he does a blowfold in Diamonds Are Forever. He gets a plastic surgery. But not a bunch of duplicates as well, which would be fun. But he hasn't got a team. He hasn't got a doctor who does this. He has got a team who can go into hiding on a plane and infiltrate the airport personnel and get over there. But he hasn't got a go-to doctor for the multiple times he's had plastic surgery. Anyway, so the plastic surgeon keeps checking the clock, as he knows, as the FBI kind of raid them at midday. And what do you know? It goes awry. But the jump out of the window, he's several stories up.
He escapes by bridging through the window.
He leaps out of the window onto a convenient umbrella that he did not know was there when he jumped out of the window.
And how many floors is it? Got to be at least 3 or 4.
It's at least. So that was a jump that I don't know if he expected to survive. It's unclear to me. Either way.
Well, I'm also confused by his, there is no pain. So when he said that, I was like, is this guy like, what's his name in the one Bond movie?
Robert Carlyle.
Yes, Robert Carlyle, where he simply can't feel pain, because then he just, exits through the window with the assumption like, oh, I'll be fine no matter how far up I am. So I was like, well, maybe this dude doesn't feel any pain. I don't remember that being a
fractures plot. Heal. But then there's a foot chase where he's pushing random bystanders out of the way. The police are chasing him in a car. Yeah, with joy, he's loving doing it. So then he gets apprehended by a water bottle truck turning over, and the bottles of water cascading down. Like the bottles aren't getting him. It's the water that kind of floods out towards him, and that pins him to the
ground. Team going, what can we get that's real cheap but will look good on camera? Yeah. Water. Bottles. I will say that Bruce Payne in this movie, like. Definitely a dude that understood the assignment. Is going big and chewing all the scenery. Not in a good way, like in a, I'm clawing all of this and eating it.
Yeah, in a way. He's playing a pantomime version of Alan Rickman.
Absolutely.
He's like, I'm not as good as him, but I can do more. Worse. I'll do bigger. So he's arrested. And then we meet the hero. Then we meet Wesley Snipes, who is teaching flight attendants, including Alex Datcher as Marty Slayton. He's teaching the flight attendants. This is what I find interesting. He's teaching them that the way they should behave is to do exactly what somebody with a gun tells them to do.
Yes.
If there's a hostage taker with a gun, sit to your head, you follow the directions. We then get the flashbacks to the door robbery where his wife was killed, where he did exactly what the guy said he should do, and his wife got shot.
Yeah. I'm not sure that establishment, and the training sequence is meant to be character development, right? But I'm not sure we learn anything from it, aside from knowing who Marty is and who he is. And I think we're just meant to understand that he's really good at his job. His job, air quotes. Between what Tom Sizemore says, what he says, and then what Bruce Greenwood says, I'm never really sure what his job was, what his job is, or what job he just got offered. All of which are on the table.
It doesn't matter. He's just the best. That's all we know. It doesn't matter what his job is. He's the best.
He's the best at it. Airline security, maybe. I do remember this, and again, dating, especially movies in the 90s that took place on airplanes.
There's a lot. It's a
because the fact when they're like, oh yeah, do you know how many flights got hijacked? And I remember thinking like, yeah, actually that used to be a thing where flights would regularly get hijacked. It's not a thing so much anymore, or at least we don't hear about it at all. But yeah, that used to be a very real threat.
They say that they don't mess with, I can't remember what country they say they don't mess with.
But Israel.
So yeah, Israel has never had a hijacking.
Honestly, it's probably still the case. No one wants to mess with them.
I mean, do you know about the first draft for this film?
No, please tell me about it.
There was a script by Stuart Raffel where it was originally supposed to star Clint Eastwood or a Clint Eastwood-like person who was going to bury his son in Spain and sit next to an Iranian terrorist on the plane. And the Iranian terrorist hijacks the plane and takes them all to Iran. There, Clint Eastwood escapes and kidnaps the mosque leaders and holds them hostage until the American passengers are released.
You know what? I'm not going to lie to you. I'm glad they didn't make that.
100%. That would have aged terribly. That would
terribly. Have been awful. And yet, I feel like Clint Eastwood would be all in on that.
Yeah, completely.
That old racist.
That's his next film, I think. It's a 92-year-old Clint Eastwood is going to be doing that
he will
year.
Direct, released in December, and still get nominated for a damn Oscar.
And he'll sing the theme tune. But when they had the original script done for this, it was supposed to star Sly Stallone.
Sure. Is that why Tom Sizemore's name is Sly Del Vecchio?
It is indeed. But I got to thinking, if Stallone hadn't turned this down, we might have been covering this over on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. So I reckon he might have brought Rennie Harlin on for that one instead of Cliffhanger.
It's about that time, yeah.
Yeah, it's about that time. So we could have been covering this either way. He'd have been a guest on either show. And the 57 on Plastic 57 is inspired by a bottle of ketchup.
Of course it is. And it's Heinz 57 and multiple
Yes. We'll get into the title soon because I kind of hate it. So we meet John Tutter, a name I could never remember. I know they say it every other line, but it just never stuck with me.
No, but to be fair, I think that's a testament to the star quality in these types of movies in this era. The name of the hero was less important than the actor, so really it's just Wesley Snipes. Who cares what the character name? You could tell me it's John Cutter now, I'm going to forget it in an hour and a half. It doesn't matter. Like Sylvester Stallone in any of the movies that wasn't Rambo or Rocky, what is his name? No clue. It's Sylvester Stallone. Cliffhanger, what was his name? It's Sylvester Stallone. Kit? I don't know.
His name? I think his name is Kit.
Is it? Or is it just Sylvester Stallone? any of them.
Cliffhanger. Yeah. Oh, Gabe Walker. What's his name in Cliffhanger? Gabe Walker. What was he hitting? He was hitting something. I need to solve this now. What did something called him hitting?
Yeah. Any Dolph Lundgren movie? Any Arnold movie? Any of them?
Okay. I haven't got to it yet. He played Kit Latoura in Daylight.
Okay.
A film I talk about too much. I am, I think, the person on podcasts who likes Daylight the most. On all podcasts, I am the one who goes back to Daylight constantly.
Nice.
I should have known what that was. And then, of course, it's John Spartan in Demolition Man.
Oh, no, that's one I probably could have given you, John Spartan.
We should have known.
Because everyone calls him John Spartan repeatedly.
Yes, and that's of
course. And in that one, I can tell you that was his name. His name is Phoenix.
Simon Phoenix. Yes.
So okay, so that movie might be the exception, but
that is the film I know Wesley Snipes from the most. I haven't seen the Blade films.
Okay.
I will be changing that this year.
Blade 1 and Blade 2, and you can stop there.
I cannot. I am curious as to how bad 3 is, and they're all streaming at the moment. I've had 2 on DVD for a decade, maybe, just never watched it.
2 is my favorite.
I hear that a lot, and I will be crossing them all off this year. As it was discussed on a previous episode, where the title of the episode on this show is Bunny Juggling Thunder Bunnies. The only thing I had to do. I want to see that line. I've only seen him in that, in The Expendables 3.
He's very good in Expendables 3. That
he is.
Movie.
He's Dr. Death.
Yeah, he's fantastic in the front end, and then Harrison Ford steals the back end of that movie. Who'd have thought?
Dolmite Is My Name, I thought he was very good in.
Excellent in that.
But I haven't, and, you know, what's it called?
White Man Can't Jump. Is yes. Very good if you haven't seen that.
I've like seen U.S. Marshals, but it's been a long time. I know that you're a fan of that one.
I like that one, too.
But that's it. That's
There's one called The Art of War that is very, a little strange, but I like that one. And then all the all the Spike Lee movies he did are all very good as well. Okay. Very heavy. Those are way, very serious dramas. So those are good. Not as fun. But like okay. All the Wesley Woody movies. So White Man Can't Jump, if you haven't seen Wildcats, they're all very American. Like Wildcats is about high school American football. And then Money Train, which is kind of ridiculous as well, but entertaining. So
I haven't seen Money Train. I will pass on the football one. It's
Major funny. League is the other one that he's excellent in. However, that's very much a baseball movie. Yeah. So I don't know that I can sell you on that.
No, I don't even know if that's a sport.
You're correct.
I've had pushback on that before. Hold on, Lisa. I'm not a fan of that comment. So we find out with the training montage, the flashback, that his wife died in a robbery. He's taken a vow of chastity, kind of, since his wife passed. Whether that's a real or a metaphorical one, where he just can't seem to find anybody.
Tom Sizemore keeps saying, you got to get back out there. Well, how long has it been? I feel like this movie...
Unclear.
It could have been 6 months ago, could have been 3 years ago, could have been 10 years ago.
Yesterday.
Tom Sizemore is insistent that he get back out there.
Yep. And so he's very jealous of when the lady pats him down, Wesley Snipes. Yes, of course the bloody metal detector went off. You're still wearing your sunglasses and that giant belt buckle. What are you thinking?
You gotta keep your pants up. Those were very baggy pants because that was the style at the time.
He's been hired. Wesley Snipes has been hired by Bruce Greenwood to go and work security. He's the president of Atlantic International Airlines, taking one of these planes. One of the problems I have with this is there's a lot of coincidence, and it's not a very simple. It's not like he's in the building. Terrorists have taken over the building.
Right.
Like, that's straightforward. And there's. Prisoners have taken over the plane. He's a good guy. Like, that's quite straightforward. There's a lot of coincidence in that. Okay, so he's getting the plane. The plane is owned by his new boss.
He's taking the flight to go somewhere to get his new job, which he already interviewed for somewhere else, which, by the way, the cuts in the interview made no sense to me, but that's, you know, whatever. So he's on the flight. The flight just happens to have the same flight attendant who was in his training class before. And then within that, also, they're transporting this prisoner on this airplane.
On this commercial airline that did not know he was going to be there until he arrived. The FBI can apparently just do that.
Yes.
They sit this international hijacking, a sadistic international terrorist mastermind, as Wikipedia calls him. They sit him next to a child, which...
someone in the movie literally asked, and I think it was Tom Sizemore, I don't remember who, this guy is known for hijacking planes. You guys didn't think to transport him on a bus or a train?
Right. It's not an international flight. They're not going across the bloody ocean. You just drive him. You have these armored trucks for this.
Yes, the level of coincidence is ridiculous. And then we find that... Marty, the flight attendant, while counting count people back in the day, where she gets to passenger 55, passenger 56, she sees him, passenger 50, pauses, looks at him, he looks at her, skips it, passenger 58. I'm like, okay, very clever, way to work in the title. But then we learn that he also has a problem with flying, doesn't enjoy flying.
Gotta take an aspirin. Yeah, well, that's the John McClane of it, I think. Yeah, you just fist with your toes.
Ridiculous.
But I... hate that that's the only reason it's called Passenger 57 is because somebody did a head count that started in an arbitrary place and he happened to be 57th in and it means nothing. It's such an awful nothing title. Like, his seat number would have made more sense. You know, just call it Passenger G15 or whatever. Like, it's not as catchy, granted, but it's just such a It's not something I should get caught up on, because it doesn't mean anything. It's just the title of the film. But I found it irritating that that's all it was. It's like, I'm counting, and that's where I am, and I'm gonna, and now this is 58. If the person behind you does like, they'll be passing 58. Right. So there's so much coincidence. I was half expecting the criminal from the flashback at the start to be one of the terrorist people as well. Just like, it's another guy. This guy who killed my wife. I'm going to get him. But not the case.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned the arbitrariness of Rain's team. In these other matches, other movies that we've compared this to already, like you get to know the team, you at least like a couple of members of the team. In Die Hard, you know half of Hans's team, and Con Air, you really know the team. Here, like, there's one dude, his entire character development is Fourche is French, because the stewardess pronounces it incorrectly. Okay,
is
great.
French, but is also Native American?
He seems to be some sort of indigenous, and that actor who did all of these movies at the time, yes.
Michael
Horse
is his name.
Yes.
Michael Horse.
Yeah. But he's really the only one we get any kind of...
Well, there's him and there's Elizabeth Hurley, who is
like
top build of his henchmen, I guess. And then there's the silent guy with the glasses who reminded me of Topher Grace in Predators. That kind of creepy kind of person. And then there's the guy below decks.
In
the hold. For some reason, his name, I don't know, Robert was his name, but I don't think he's ever said it.
They're all creepy. They're all very creepy. And the idea that Rain is able to somehow get all these folks on this plane so that they're ready to take over the plane once it gets up in the air, how? Doesn't matter. He says this to his attorney when he is met in... By the way, there's a shot, one of the stars I put in my notes. I love a movie that takes the time to zoom in on somebody through a fence and gets their eyes in the spaces in the fence. Great. Love it. Yeah. Definitely do that. He meets with his attorney. He's like, get my people on the plane. And that's all the coordination we get. And then they're on the plane. And they release him once they get up in the air. I do love when he gets freed, because Wesley is upset at being on a plane and in the bathroom. When they release him and he goes up into the cockpit, this sequence, having never forgot this, when he goes in immediately, who's in charge? And the pilot goes, I am. Shoots that dude. Once again, who's in charge? And the next guy is like, you are. Love that. Great. Establishes villainy very clearly.
Had I been the next guy, the co-pilot, I think I would have not got it. I was like, well, okay, so he's to me, I guess. And
then you're left with just one guy up there.
Yeah, and it's like the navigator. Oh, me? No, wait, hang on.
One of the stewardesses?
There's a chain of command, hang on. So it's the pilot, then the co-pilot. And then, hang on, I'm going to radio back. I'm going to radio base and see what they say. Hang
Let
on,
me get that answer for
a second. there's the long-haired henchman as well, who tries to apprehend Wesley Snipes and fails.
Oh, and I forgot the old lady that, because Marty, the flight attendant, is still upset with him, so as the plane is taking off, when he asks for water and aspirin, she is snippy with him, and so to appease his negative feelings towards flying, brings an old lady who's very chatty to sit next to him, who immediately confuses him for Arsenio Hall.
Well, I think... Marty told her that he was Arsenio Hall.
Probably, yes.
And I had to look up who she was confusing him with. Because she says, like, I watch your show all the time where you whoop a lot and you do the things that make you go, hmm. And this meant nothing to me. So I had to Google things that make you go, hmm. And it was like, okay, I get it.
Arsenio was fantastic. And that
I know him from Coming to America, but that's it.
Yes. But he had a late night talk show that ran opposite Johnny Carson's Tonight Show for years and was the fun, hip one. And, like, I used to sneak out of bed to watch it every night.
No.
Excellent show. Super fun. Much more accessible towards younger people and people who were not white. Johnny Carson was, you know, fine, but, like, Arsenio was looking for an audience of everyone. And, yeah, the whooping for the dog pound, and then the things that make you go home, and then other things. It's where most of America first saw Bill Clinton, as he showed up to play the saxophone.
Yes. I did not know that. Okay.
And it may or may not, I'm sure it was a factor in him getting elected, because people were like, oh yeah, I saw him play saxophone on Arsenio. All right.
Is that where he did the interview where they asked if he wears boxers or briefs?
Probably, yeah. Else?
Yeah, because yeah, okay. Which I've seen described as the downfall of American society, was that question being asked to a president. Like, okay, maybe it's somewhere else. But
yeah, maybe.
Many things. Anyway.
But I will tell you that Wesley Snipes does not look like Arsenio Hall, so all right.
No, agreed. So Elizabeth Hurley manages to take out all of the FBI agents on her own, which yes. I kind of loved, because they're just not expecting it. She just, there's a gun, and then take them all out. And then they have the plane. They have the plane. The plane itself. Yeah. And, but it's also immediately, straight away, that they know that Wesley Snipes is on board, because he's hiding out. He's not hiding. He's in the toilet when this happens. And he manages to overhear what's happening, make a phone call to Sly Delvecchio.
Using a payphone on a plane with a credit card, yep. Which yep. I remember.
I do not. So he manages to alert Sly to what's going on. But then straight away, Charles Ray knows that he is this special forces, whatever, mystery ninja guy. And he's on board. Like, this is the opposite of Die Hard, where it's like skulking around the shadows. Where is he at any time? They know he's there. They have him. Like,
they know he's there. He's in the back of the plane, and there's a handful of them in the front of the plane, and then he manages to head down to the lower level of the plane. Like at no point is there enough space on this plane for everyone to be missing one another.
Right. It's a plane. Yeah, this is where this is kind of the action that's missing that you would find in Die Hard, where that period of time where it's like a mystery. Like, who is this guy? Where is this guy? What's going on? Why is he here? Because everyone knows everything immediately, straight away.
Yeah, yeah. I think what I had forgotten about this is in rewatching is like they're only on the plane for a little bit, and then immediately, because as Wesley Snipes heads down to, I'm sorry, John Cutter, see, I forgot it already, grabs Marty, heads down to the lower level. His plane is, okay, I'm going to dump the fuel, so we have to land. We force them to land. Okay, great. So then the plane lands in the middle of Louisiana at this tiny little airfield next to a ongoing carnival, which had a... one Confederate flag is too many, but had far more than necessary. But again, maybe that's a dated thing, but yeesh.
I would hope so.
So, yeah. Then they're only in the air for, I don't know, of the movie, a few minutes.
See, that's it. He's only a passenger at number 57 for like 5 minutes of the film. This is my point.
Right. Right.
So many people die hard. The cons are in the air for ages. The titles make sense. They're steep. Yeah. It's blue. Yeah. It's the sea.
Well, and if, as you mentioned, if they didn't know who he was or didn't know what his deal was and were only referring to him as passenger number 57 for an extended period of time, yes.
That makes sense.
They're not. They immediately know his name.
Yeah. If they did they have a list, they do accounts, like, where's 57? Yeah, that would be a better film. Be a better film. So. So yeah, so John and Marcy are down below. They take out, well, they fight the below decks henchmen. I know it's not below decks, because that's a blunt term, but he's below decks.
Yes.
And then there's a little phone call between Snipes and Bruce Payne, during which Bruce Payne asks, speaking of boys, our stewardess friend must be feeling particularly unsatisfied in the line
yes.
of dialogue between the two. I don't understand.
Well, there's something like it could be racist.
Okay.
Could be
that.
Right. Well, the use of the word boy, which they do a lot later on,
okay.
extremely racist in the southern United States.
When they get to Louisiana and it turns into. I can't think of the name of the film. The really famous film about I can't think of the name of the act. When Sidney Poitier goes to the South.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
What's that film called?
Call me. There's a couple of them.
What's the first one?
The Heat of the Night.
It goes all in the heat of the night. Oh, bloody hell, that was terrible. When it goes all in the heat of the night with all the Louisiana cops. Yes.
Yes.
That
yes.
becomes terrible. Very racist. Different yes. from Sylvester Stallone version. Always better.
Yeah, I hate that line. My assumption is that he's attempting to insult him both racially and sexually, but who knows, because it's a very odd line. But it does lead to the, do you ever play roulette, and occasionally, and then the crash zoom to Wesley saying, always bet on black, which, if you ask the average person what they know about this movie, that is the line that they know.
That is the line that I knew. what I didn't remember was that it was a self-setup.
It's not
a punchline to something somebody else said. It's not a yippee-ki-yay after being told he's like a cowboy from somebody else. This is him, like, Wesley Snipes' character saying, bringing up roulette, always belong track. This should not be allowed. You cannot do this.
I appreciate the self-setup, but also I think it's perhaps in response to the, if the you must be unsatisfied is a racial insult, then clearly it's a response to that, right?
That's fair. Maybe? Yes. Okay. That's fair enough. It still feels like a self-setup.
It is. He throws the ball up to himself and then hits a home run with it.
It reduces how clever it should be, could be.
I love that zoom, that swift zoom in. Yeah. Like, the camera was just on him and Marty fairly close up as they were on the phone having the conversation. And then for some reason, the camera has now backed up 10 feet so that it can swiftly zoom in as he says, oh, it's been on black.
They took an early lunch the day that they wrote that line. And that's in the trailer. That's the end of the trailer, is that whole back and forth.
Yeah, and then it's after a bunch of, like, not only did they take an early lunch, they high-fived themselves so hard their hands all hurt, and then they took.
They came back from lunch, did some high-fiving, and thought, no, that's it for the day. And they came back, reread what they'd written, laughs all round, and just an early weekend. So they cut the fuel. they cut the fuel, force them to land. During the landing, Wesley Snipes is kicked off the plane, the moving plane. He and Martius are going to jump out, but then Charles Rain apprehends them and kicks Wesley Snipes off the plane. And he gets taken in by Sheriff Biggs.
He gets arrested by generic racist Southern cops first, and then the sheriff throws a little good old-fashioned Southern racism at him before, wow, I almost said Michael Madsen. Tom Sizemore shows up to kind of clarify what's happening. And then you get his other boss who shows up you mean John Cutter's on that plane?
Oh, all right. Dwight Henderson, FBI, Robert Hooks.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he and Cutter have never met. He's just in the FBI and is a big fan of this guy. He's like, John Cutter?
Well, he's my hero. He's the father of the director, so what are you gonna do?
Yeah, I mean, acting wise, he's fine. I had no problem with it, with his performance. It was just the character of, like, John Cutter, can you sign my badge?
He's the best. The best of what? We still don't know, but he's the
anything,
best.
Anything, whatever. He's the best. So he gets. I did like the touch of Rain calling up Sheriff Biggs and saying, you've got one of my men. Kick him around up there for me.
Very slick.
Yeah, that was nice. But of course, it's Wesley Snipes. He gets away with a couple of spin kicks, kicks the police out, and runs away.
I put a little star next to you. Again, as we mentioned, there's a carnival. There's some great fence jumping, and then a very impressive dive roll for no reason.
Is this the? I starred the roll as well, where he so. Yeah, he steals a police bike and heads to the fairground, because that's it's a carnival, sorry, because that's where Charles Rain and Julius Hitchman have gone. Yep. Everyone's left the place. They've let half the hostages go.
They let half the hostages go because Rain's idea is, okay, well, while we're letting them go, we're going to let them think we're still on the plane, but I'm going to get off the plane, and then I'm just going to take off, and that's how I escape. Which goes fairly well, except that, Cutter's aware, and so he's chasing after him to the carnival, but the cops are chasing him.
it's a bonkers plan, for many reasons. But they've also left two of their team on the plane with the hostages. All the hostages know that these are bad guys, so there's no like, if they get away, if Charles Rain gets away, I don't know, Elizabeth Hurley is screwed. He doesn't care. They leave through the pinball hatch in the bottom of the plane, mm-hmm. which is good. Mm-hmm. Head to the carnival, and so Wesley Snipes goes after them, and then you get Wesley Snipes just kind of stalking them through the carnival, which is fun. And they get to a carousel.
Dive rolling for no reason.
Yes, well, there's my favorite dive roll was after the carousel.
Yes.
Because there's the carousel and there's the Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
Which was first?
The Ferris wheel first, because he jumps onto, he dive rolls, first he leaps, he kind of side hurdles a fence for no reason, just to hop a fence, and then he dive rolls, the first dive roll is over a fence, and then he jumps onto a Ferris wheel. Rides it up, eliminates one dude, the quiet guy with the glasses, by knocking him off the Ferris wheel, comes down off the Ferris wheel, and then there's another dive roll. In my notes, I have dive roll number two.
That's my favorite one. There's a pole that's like at a 45-degree angle, and it's a relatively small step down from the platform he's on. But instead, he does a full 360 around the pole to then land, but he could have just down.
Adds a flare, whips around the pole for no reason, lands, and then in the middle of an open grassland where he could have easily like taken three steps, instead dive rolls.
Yep. And the quiet guy accidentally shot a clown.
That's right.
Then Tom Sizemore arrives and explains everything to the sheriff. They kind of make the way back to the airport. Because like Rain gets caught.
He gets caught, but then they're like, well, we got to put him back on the plane. As they are discussing this idea, because their idea is we need to get him to think it's his idea to get back on the plane. While he's getting back on the plane, we're going to send some guys in to take him out as he's getting on the plane, sniper will like, and we're going to throw some tear gas in to take out the rest of the hijackers. So we need to have a little discussion with him in which he decides he wants to get back on the plane. While they are discussing this plan, which, by the way, my note, this plan sounds crazy. That's what I have written down. the level of acting while they are, and it's the sheriff, and it's Henderson, and it's Cutter, and it's Sly Del Vecchio. The amount of exasperated hand gestures and loud talking is sublime. It is just absolute nonsense. Every performance is crazier than the last.
I agree completely. And then you add on top of that a shootout ensuing. The snipers are one of Rain's men. Pain and Rain. The pain playing Rain has been frustrating this whole time.
Very difficult to keep straight.
One of his men has also become a sniper, or took out the police snipers. And then shoots Robert Hooks in the arm.
So he successfully gets back on the plane.
Yes, but Forge, the French Native American guy.
It's French.
He's driving the moving stairs. Get up the plane, which get shot a couple of times and trip over and explode like nothing has ever exploded before.
A huge explosion from a stair car. Have you watched Arrested Development?
I have, yes.
It's impossible to see one of those and not think about that show.
I'm just imagining people hopping on as he's driving along and getting a free lift to work.
Yeah, you're going to get some hop-ons.
Oh, dear. I just the beautiful explosion that comes out of that thing. It was a delight. Scoot out in series. Carter manages to take out the sniper, and then they gotta get back on the plane because Rain's back on the plane. They're texting to get off. So Clutter, Sly Del Vecchio, and Sheriff Biggs are driving along, and he manages to get onto the landing gear and up into the plane, which didn't work out well for Pimble, but seems to have worked out okay for him.
Right, the conversation in that car as the three of them are driving up to the plane, which again, just utter. Yeah,
but I mean the conversation between Rain and Marty on the plane. Not my matter. Where
He threatens to kill her while raping her.
Yes, because he says he wants something to drink. She says, "What do you want?" He says, "Anything wet." And then he asks if Carter got into her tight little place. And then explains that he wants to. And she says, "You have to kill me first." And his response is, "No, I'm going to kill you during."
Yes.
I'll admit, I laughed at that line. It's the audacity of it. It's like, you're going, what did you say?
Yeah, it's disturbing on a lot of levels. And I don't know.
It's a choice.
A choice. That's what it is. Yep.
Yeah, so Carter's on the plane. He takes out the French guy with golf clubs. He makes his way. He takes out Elizabeth
putter.
Hurley.
Cutter uses a putter to eliminate one of the bad guys.
Yep. He takes out Elizabeth Hurley quite easily and says, "What a waste." And she's a active lady, I guess.
And then says to the pilot, as he pops up into the pilot area, what do you call that? The cockpit.
The cockpit.
And says to him, "Can you turn this plane around and land where you just took off?" He was like, "I did it once, didn't I? Well, man, why didn't you do that before? Why is this? Whatever. Fine." So he's now going to turn it around and land where they were going to land. I made a note about early on in this movie when they first take over, there are gunshots on the plane. And I noted it is very unusual to see gunfire on a plane, and at no point does a window accidentally get shot out. Then we get down here to the end. There it is. There's gunfire and a window gets shot. I knew it had to happen.
I did like the pilot saying, "Do you need any help?" And his response was, "No, I got it."
Well, he says there's only one left. I was grateful for that because I was not sure how many there were. So I'm glad, number one, the co-pilot was like, "Yeah, do you need any help? Man, where have you been? Okay, whatever. A little late in offering your assistance." But then to be like, "Oh, no, there's only one left. Well, thank you," because I wasn't sure.
Yep. So then the plane window gets shot out. It depressurizes. Everything's flying out. Marty screams, which distracts Rain for a little bit, which allows Carter to attack. He's like, I did love with like climbing over the plane seats to get to the guy. That's like quite a nice action shot of just like, yeah, these seats are, you can't do anything with these, just climb over them. I just liked the way he was moving. It was quite cool.
He found a lot of ways to work in unnecessary athleticism to this movie. The dive rolls, the fence jumping, the climbing over the seats.
Yeah. And Rain ends up getting, every time I say Rain, I have to think, like, Pain?
Is it Pain? No, it's Rain.
Rain.
Because it's so, Rain, because he's the Rain of Terror, it's but it's played terror. By Bruce Payne, but the character also mentions repeatedly how there is no pain. So,
that's it. And, like, Pain, like, the Rain of Terror, that's, and like, you got to make a connection to get to how that's a villain name. Pain, you're already there.
Yeah.
It's just Charles Pain. Anyway, they couldn't have called him Charles Payne, played by Bruce Payne. That would somehow be more confusing, I guess. By the way, Rain Payne gets stuck in the opening that's been shot out. Wesley Snipes gives him two next to the groin, and one to the face, and then he pulls out
the pain. Yeah, and I made another note of, like, does this dude really feel no pain? Because he gets repeatedly pummeled in the groin area and seems to not react. So I was like, maybe he legitimately feels no pain, but then he promptly gets knocked out of the airplane. So, you know,
but that's fine. There's no kill line. There's no Roger Moore quip. There's no, like, happy landings. Right? It's just...
Well, no, but then, when someone's like, "Did you take care of him?" And he goes, "You damn Skippy, I did." So, there is that. We used to say that in high school a lot.
Damn Skippy is something I say as well, but not from this. I don't know where I got it from. So there's no kind of kill quip there. Instead, you get a call from the ground.
Yeah.
We end up getting a couple of quips in a row here. You get a call from Tom Sizemore and everyone else who's in the car, where they say, "What's your status?" And then Wesley Snipes' response is, "Single, looks at Marty, but I'm working on it.
Yeah, oh boy. All right,
and then Big says something, and Wesley Snipes is like, "Big, is that you?" And Big's reply is, "In the flesh." And Snipes' reply, "That's a revolting thought." And everyone laughs, and I expected it to go to a freeze frame like the end of a sitcom.
That's what I wrote down. A literal laugh around the chair. The noted Star Trek final shot of everyone laughing around the chair. There's a literal laugh around the chair there.
And then you get more whoops from Arsenio Hall lady on the plane.
The plane still thinks he's Arsenio, and so they all do the whoop.
So apparently everyone on the plane thinks he's Arsenio.
Yeah.
Which cannot be the case. It's no. And then that's it. They
land and they walk off through the carnival, which is now shooting off fireworks. And my question, which I wrote down, this carnival just had a gun shootout an hour ago. How are they still going on? Number one, number two, shooting off fireworks.
Yeah. It seems like a bad idea. Yeah, so they walk into that one and they decline a lift from Biggs. And that's the end of Passenger 57. There was never a Passenger 58.
And yet the opportunity was right there.
I mean, the film did well. It cost $15 million to make. It made $66 million at the box office. You know, that's good. It made money. It wasn't well received critically, I think. But it's a fun film. I had fun with it. My wife didn't, but I enjoyed it.
It's like I said, harmless. Great to watch on a Saturday afternoon when you're working on something else. You can just leave it on in the background.
Absolutely, yeah.
I do like this little note of film mostly in Central Florida because Wesley Snipes went to high school in Orlando, where he went, and any student that had a high grade point average, he offered them roles as attendees at the carnival. Come on, that's great.
I mean, that's such a small role. Like, attendees, no one there. Do you remember anybody from the carnival scene who wasn't one of the named characters?
No.
No.
But there were a ton of people wandering around there, so hey. Crazy. Yeah, it's, you know, like we said, it's fine. I couldn't help thinking, and I don't know if you've seen yet, Plane?
I have not. Mark has.
You have to. It's.
I probably won't see it in the cinema, but I will see it once it hits.
It is an absolute delight. It is very much like this, but it's so straightforward and no fuss, no muss. You don't need to worry about anything. It's all going to be fine. It's great.
Okay. I'll see it.
Very similar that you throw a prisoner on a plane and then stuff happens. The only difference is in that case, the pilot has to team up with the prisoner in order to save all the hostages, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I like Jerry Butler. I like Mike Coulter. I'm in.
There you go. That's all you need.
I don't know if anyone else is in the film. You don't need anyone else. You got those two.
I'm trying to think if anyone else was.
It's just two people in the cast.
Yeah, oh. Oh, and Joey Slotnick.
I don't know who that is.
Oh, Lord. So
I did a head count. There are 6 cons in the air. Assuming that all of Bane's team have been arrested at some point and therefore are cons. If not, then there is one confirmed con in that Rain has been. See? That's every time. Rain has been arrested, so he is convicted.
Yes.
The rest of them, but assume so. Six cons in the air.
Yes, I would assume. I mean, these are bad guys,
hardened criminals.
Yes,
Elizabeth Hurley. It's like she was like 19 or something. This was made. It was one of her first films. I think
so young in this.
I think she was good. You know, I like Elizabeth Hurley.
Yeah, I think she did a great job in this.
This is her fifth film.
Really? Good 92, lord.
92, she's 27. Okay.
Oh, that's
fair enough. Any more notes on Passenger 57?
I honestly, no. It's just fine. It's fine.
Yeah, I didn't do my Deep Blue Sea adjacent thing where I do a list of comparisons. I haven't been doing that for Connor.
All right.
Just because, you know, it's in a plane.
Yes, yes.
An escaped convict takes over a plane.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a diatribe. Yeah, excellent. So, what have you got to plug then? Where can the listeners find more of you online?
Oh, you can find me on all the socials there. You can visit my reviews over at jwardadventures.blogspot.com. I am behind because, you know, holidays and then work right after the holidays. It's been crazy. But, so I am working on reviews of, Glass Onion, Plane, which such a delight. Everyone wants to see Plane. Avatar, The Way of Water. Don't bother.
That's what I will be seeing. I haven't seen it yet because when it came out, I had COVID.
It's also fine.
Feels very Deep Blue Sea adjacent. So I feel
it absolutely does. It's very deep and very blue.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna have to watch it
at least twice. Once in the cinema, and once at home to work out how deep and blue it is.
Correct. Yeah. Whereas like Wakanda Forever had a lot of very, very deep scenes, but they weren't very blue because it was very dark.
I haven't seen that yet either.
Okay. Just be on the lookout for the underwater is very, very deep.
But it's going to be on Disney Plus in 2 weeks. Yes. I'll be watching it there, and I'm certain we'll do a Deep Blue Scene special episode for Deep Blue Sea. We do the occasional scene similar to Deep Blue Sea, where we did the Harry Potter 4, the late scene where the guy turns into a shark.
With the bubble and.
And we did the Gremlins kitchen fight because it's animals in a kitchen.
Sure.
I don't know.
That works.
We have a list. And so I'm sure there'll be some Wakanda Forever Deep Blue scenes at some point.
I like it. Yeah, the other one that I'm working on is The Significant Other, which was your recommendation, which I really enjoyed. Really enjoyed. It was super helpful to go into it not knowing anything about it.
I had the same experience. Yeah, I watched that wrapping Christmas presents, which I feel like is the perfect way to watch that film. It's not dedicate an hour and a half of your time. It's you watch it. And there's a scene in that we'll probably be covering on Deep Blue Sea at some point as well.
Yes, I thought that while I was watching. I was like, oh, this should probably be on a Deep Blue Sea adjacent show.
Yep, it will be. Mark literally messaged me saying, have you seen Significant Other? Watch it. There's a scene you'll like. And that's all I had. That's the information that you gave me.
How lovely, though, to get that tip. Be like, not only do I like that scene, I like the whole movie.
Yeah, it was fun. Significant Other. Paramount Plus now.
Yes.
Good. Well, listeners, you can find me on this show normally covering Con Air scene by scene. So come back next week for another episode of that. On Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, Mark and I are going through Deep Blue Sea adjacent films. Recently, we've done episodes on The Poseidon Adventure and Beyond The Poseidon Adventure, an upcoming Poseidon at some point eventually, once we can. And I think there's going to be an episode soon on The Final Countdown, a time travel boat film.
That's not
Triangle. Yeah, it exists. It's out there. We're going to talk about it. And you can hear me once a month hosting Lampity Movie Trivia. On the Lambcast, the podcast for the Large Association of Movie Blogs. So if you enjoy movie trivia, then go listen to that. And if you want to participate, then let me know. I'm looking for guests. And my personal site is lifeversusfilm.com, lifeversusfilm, where I do some end of the year stuff and then nothing for the rest of the year generally. We'll see. Literally, I did my ranking of all the films that I saw 2022. My previous post was in June, where I transcribed the lyrics to Shark Knight 3D's end credits song. That's the only other post I did in 2022.
Outstanding.
Yep. Those are lyrics that you cannot find anywhere else on the internet, only on my site. Oh, I'll do this, and then I'll get thousands of hits. And guess what didn't happen? Yes. Anyway, so that'll do for Passenger 57. Thank you, Jeanette, very much for joining me.
Yes, always a delight, an honor, a pleasure. Thank you so much.
So for this show, I've been Jake Lewitt. Come back next week or the bunny gets it.
Sigh.
Hanara!
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.